It was the first time that I had stopped. The business had stopped. COVID stopped us in our tracks. And when the stores started opening up again and we started getting phone calls, you know, when are the vans back on the road? I thought, I can't go back to that. I have stopped. I have thought and I've reached a clarity that the way forward here is greater reach, made fresh to order. We know exactly what the customer wants. We're going to make it. We're going to send it out in bulk and we're going to get paid for it. This is the way I want to go.
Love it.
And today we have excellent representation all across the island of Ireland. We have a great working relationship with Lidl, Aldi, Tesco, Dunnes, Super Value, Applegreen. And would you believe we've just launched nationwide with BWG, who are the head group for Spar, Eurospar, Mace, Landis, Gala. So this is really a big move because we had great representation in Spar, Eurospar stores prior to COVID. We then went from, say, 30% with that retail group to virtually nothing, to now we're supplying them nationwide.
It takes only one breach, one single click to take down your entire business. Imagine your life's work gone like that. Cybercriminals know this, and they're targeting companies like yours every single day of the week. Nostra's Cloud Shield 365 is built to stop them. With Microsoft Business Premium, advanced threat detection, and 24/7 monitoring, we protect your data, your people, and your bottom line. Don't leave it to chance. Visit nostra.ie today. That's nostra.ie today, and see how Cloud Shield 365 keeps your business safe.
Before we dive into today's episode, I want to share a game changer for your business, Azure Communications. When it comes to print and marketing solutions, these folks, led by CEO Jenny Johnston, are the real deal. Whether you need an eye-catching brochure, sleek business cards, or a full-blown digital campaign, Azure Communications has you covered. They're not just about high-quality prints or digital campaigns, they're also about delivering great results. And here's the best part. Just for listeners of The Entrepreneur Experiment, you can get 20% off your first order. Just give them a call or go online and use the code VOX20. With personalized service and fast turnaround times, Azure Communications will help you make the impact your business deserves. Trust me, when it comes to making your brand stand out, Azure Communications is the provider of choice. Check them out at azurecom.ie. Use code VOX20 and elevate your marketing game today.
Kira, welcome to the pod.
Thanks for having me, Gary.
You were skeptical about what I was going to ask you there, weren't you?
I was.
So you are?
Oishi sushi.
Oishi sushi. I've eaten, I don't know, 1,000 of these and never knew how to pronounce it.
Ah.
So there we go. Oishi sushi.
And do you know what it means?
No.
It means delicious in Japanese.
There we go.
Oishi.
I'm holding it up because if you're watching YouTube, I guarantee you the vast majority of people watching will have had this or know the brand. It is so recognizable and it's so prevalent everywhere.
Good. Good to hear.
Yeah. So how did it start?
Pardon?
How did it start?
Well, I suppose my love of Japanese food came from the experience I had with the Trinity Business School, where I got to study over in Tokyo. We did Japanese business and language over there for a semester. And I just felt so good on the diet, just fell in love with the food and the culture and the people. So I did my first market in the summer of 2006 down in Greystones. In the Meridian Centre.
No better spot for it.
Yeah,
if there's a market in Ireland for upmarket food, it's out in Greystones.
I tell you, it was well received. A sunny Saturday in July of 2006. So yeah, I had finished the degree at that stage and I wasn't really sure what my next step was, to be honest.
Had you a food background?
Not particularly. Love of food, love of eating
I liked
food.
Eating it.
And an open mind and the confidence of youth. And that was pretty much it. I temped for a while in the Food Safety Authority of Ireland as I toyed with company names like Genki or what was the other one? Genki means healthy in Japanese, but
okay. It
just wouldn't wash in the Irish.
No, you have to be so
setting.
Careful.
No, yeah.
People are so cynical at the best
Even
of times.
Even Oishi was a bit of a risk, to be fair.
Yeah, I think,
I've been spelling it and pronouncing it for 19 years now.
Okay. So you did a market to test, was it?
I did, yeah. Saturday after Saturday, and then I expanded the markets. I started doing the Leopardstown Market, Marley Park Market, out in Howth Pier. So I have some great stories from the market days. but it's hard work. You're out in the elements, rain, hail or shine. It's the setup, the selling, the packing up, the making all of the product.
And listening to people burn the ear off you. Pardon? Mainly. Listening to people burn the ear off you is the biggest one.
That too. So yeah, tiring. So I have serious, serious respect for market traders.
I used to do the markets on a Sunday with phones.
Where?
Back in the day. Down in Clara, and I did Punchestown. I did a few of them all around Ireland. Yeah, we used to do phone unlocking, phone repairs, phone sales. Wow. Yeah.
But it's not easy.
Graft.
Yeah.
That teaches you. Yeah. That'll teach you as much as a business degree.
Graft.
Dealing with people
in
the market.
Are you going to come back the next Saturday?
They will buy and sell you.
Yeah.
They really will. Like, if people are at the markets, they're...
But I have to say, I think it was immediate feedback. I could see that the next Saturday, the same customers were back again saying, what have you got today?
Nice.
What fish have you got today? Can you try this? Can you try that? Some would go off and do their shopping in Super Value and come back to give me time to make it. And it was that positive feedback and customer response that really made me think, God, maybe I've got something here. Because the concept of Oishi at that time was just, I loved Japanese food. I wanted to share my love of it with a wider audience. I was doing green tea drizzle cake, gyoza, dumplings, yakitori skewers.
Okay. So there's
sushi.
No real master plan. It was just,
It was Oishi foods. So concept of Japanese inspired, delicious food to a wider audience. But the demand was for sushi. And it took me so long to make it, I had to eventually forego all of the other types. But yeah, the idea generally behind Oishi is a broader concept than just sushi. But Oishi sushi is what we have become well known for particularly in the retail space in Ireland.
So it was an experiment. You were testing to see what
would... It was an entrepreneur experiment.
Yeah. You'd swear I had thinking behind the name, wouldn't you? Like, I'm very bullish on that whole thesis that, like, all business is experiments. Everything is an experiment. So you're experimenting to see in the markets what the feedback would be, what was good, what was bad.
Yeah.
The customer voice. I think a lot of founders stay too far away from the customer voice. They're nearly afraid to hear the customer voice because they don't want to be told that's a terrible idea. Whereas you were like just honing and honing. So at what point did you go, yeah, it's going to be sushi, but maybe not in the markets?
I'd say after about 6 months, I was pretty wrecked. Yeah, the weather was on the turn. It was getting cold. It was getting windy and I was running out of steam. I went into a couple of the shops cold calling with some of the trays that I had left over and just asked in McGarry Morton's in Ranelagh. And he was like, oh, that's a great looking product. You know, you need to get a barcode on that now and we'll put it on the shelf, see if it'll sell. Like, oh, you know, couple of these stores are willing to support me. So what do I have to do next? Got online, approached the Food Safety Authority, got onto GS1 Ireland, bought 10 barcodes. So they just literally said, get a barcode on it. We'll stick it on a shelf and see if it sells.
Okay.
So that was the foot in the door, I suppose. Support from initial stores around Dublin. I put my mobile number on the label and it grew organically from there.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So that's a cool story because I think people often try over engineer everything. They try like, oh, I have to have a clear plan. It has to be a 5-year map out and the business plan has to be this, that and the other. Whereas like you just started.
Well, in hindsight, do I wish that I had? But I think actually if I had, maybe I would have gotten cold feet.
Yeah.
You know, hindsight's a wonderful thing.
Well, action. What's the phrase? Be patient with the results, but aggressive with the action.
Yeah. Well, definitely perseverance has kept me going. And I don't know, I think there was definitely a bit of fearless naivety in the early days that
so
I could
going
do this.
So we're back 19 years.
Yeah.
How savvy were Irish people to
sushi? I thought you were going to ask me how old I was.
I never ask you a question like that. What was the reaction to sushi? Like, did people get it? Were they savvy to it? What was the reaction?
It was really, really good. I mean, there was definitely a notion that, is that raw? Is that all raw fish? So there's so much more to sushi than raw fish. Raw fish is actually sashimi. The word sushi is referring to the vinegared rice. So really, you can pair the vinegared rice with anything, cucumber, roast peppers, smoked salmon and cream cheese. So it has become westernized. You know, it's huge in America, Australia, all across Europe. And I think each country has taken the concept and tailored it to its particular audience. But yeah, so we do use some raw fish. We use smoked fish, pasteurized crab, surimi, crab sticks, lots of different vegetables. So I think really it's the quality of the ingredients that you use that really stands to the sushi.
What's the most popular?
Popular? Well, Irish people love chicken, but they also love smoked salmon. So I would say chicken and smoked salmon.
They're very, very popular.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how did you kind of like transition then into the, because that's obviously quite a switch from the market stalls into building a product business. So how did you switch that?
How
you got into a couple
that?
Of stores, obviously, but like, how did you like even build an infrastructure? Because you were going to the markets, making it there and then, but
yeah.
How did you figure out then how to become a product business?
Well, I began in my house, so I was making everything at home and that was not sustainable. So then I found a small unit down in Kilcool, actually. And I had a Coca-Cola fridge that happened to be there and it was still working. So that was great.
Brilliant.
A very small space. And then I had to get somebody to help me make the sushi. I hired a Polish lad living in Greystones called Marcin. I'm still in touch with him today. He hadn't a word of English. So I know the Polish terms for so many items of sushi. It's we had a very funny way of communicating.
I was just going to say, hold on, step that back a bit. What was the interview like?
It was through his wife as the interpreter. But really, yeah, I just, it was my first employee. Gosh, I don't even know where I'm going with this. But yeah, it was a very unusual setup. But Marcin was great, incredibly hardworking. We didn't do a whole lot of talking.
Well, it would be hard to.
I would pick him up in the van because he didn't drive. And we started at, you know, 5 a.m. So I would pick him up in Greystones and we'd drive to Kilcool.
So fun.
And then we'd make sushi all morning and then he'd clean up and I'd hop in the van and drive to Dublin with the sushi.
Not a word spoken between you all day.
Do you know what? Such a lovely guy.
Probably the best kind of person.
Such a lovely guy. An absolute sweetheart. Big bodybuilder. I could hardly find a white coat to fit him. Incredible physique. He'd arrive into, you know, the kitchen with like a big bunch of bananas and he'd head straight to the gym afterwards.
That's a great story. I love that. So then you got your first unit and then started to kind of ramp that up. So how did you get like into stores? Like you kind of literally walked in up the street, you said.
Yeah. So from Kilcool, we moved to a bigger unit in Bray in the Sunnybank Centre. I was there for another couple of years. Around that time, we got the contract with Superquinn. It was Superquinn at the time. And I started supplying into those Superquinn stores, which were large format stores. And it was on this EPOS kind of point of sale model. So for the first time, I was getting these electronic reports of how much sushi had sold in a week. And it was just incredible to see. I was still driving the van at that stage, doing all of the deliveries, going back to the kitchen. So it was difficult. I then took on a van driver who would do the deliveries for me. And eventually then we took two routes. He would do one side of the city. I would do one side of the city.
I love that.
So it's difficult, real. Growing pains, you know. It is a lot of work and a lot of energy and a lot of long days.
I think that's the thing people overlook, though. You kind of just see these beautiful products on the shelves and you don't get an understanding of the sweat and effort and toil that goes into actually making them, getting them from the factory to you, to Super Value or Super Queen or whatever it is. Like that's a real cool story. Like you drive the van, drop the sushi off.
It is. And I suppose you're so busy looking forward that it's not often you look back and realize how far you've come and all of the effort and inputs it took to get you where you are. As you said, somebody might see me, you know, in Dublin and say, oh my God, I see your products everywhere. You're flying it. It's just great. You know, I'm thinking, do I make this look easy? You know, it's not easy at all. Like so much work goes on behind the background. And I have a team of people now supporting me, which is just phenomenal.
Every time I talk to food entrepreneurs, it just seems a hard choice. It seems
hard
like
work.
One of the tougher industries to go into. So in those early stages, like how did you know that that's what you wanted to do? Like, how did you stick with it? Because I'm sure it was quite tough in those times where you're literally driving the van day in, day out, going back to the kitchen, making all the stuff, dropping it off again. Because obviously it's not a massive, like, you're not selling things for a 1,000 euro a piece. You're selling units for like 3-4 euro a time.
It was really, really hard because it did reach the stage where actually I had to keep going. I had paid people on credit cards, my mum's credit card, my dad's credit card. I was literally pulling into the petrol station and putting €2 into the van just to get me into Dublin. The cash flow was not where it needed to be. And I remember sitting down with my brother-in-law at the kitchen table and I said, you know, I know that I'm onto something, but how do I make it work? I'm just chasing my tail. I feel like I'm treading water. And we did this Excel exercise. And he said, okay, you know, how many units are you making roughly a week at the moment? And how many people are you hiring? And how long has it taken to make? So we worked out this tray per hour scale. And at that time, if you looked at that scale, I was at about 7 trays per man hour. And I was not making money. And we worked out on the Excel spreadsheet where on this tray per hour scale I had to get to. 1, to break even, and 2, to start making money. And this, for me, obviously it still stands with me because I'm telling you today, but I went back to the kitchen and I spoke to the team and I said, we have to find a way to work more efficiently. And we just brainstormed and we went, like, on a very basic level. A very basic example is, like, we were cutting the sushi rolls on a chopping board with a really sharp knife into 8 pieces. Then we went from 1 to 2, right? We'll cut them 2 at a time. We'll get more efficient. We were hand filling the wasabi 1 by 1 into each tray, blobs of wasabi. So, well, if we put it into a piping bag, we could do it so much quicker. So we piped it.
Okay.
If we can pipe the wasabi, maybe we could pipe the tuna mix. Put a bit of more mayonnaise in there. We like pipe the tuna in. So I suppose just the efficiencies evolved in a very, very small way. And I reached out to the Wicklow Enterprise Board. I got support from them. They helped me formulate a business plan slightly after the fact, but we did formulate it. And I got some CapEx, purchased my first automated machines, not particularly complicated machines, but a machine that would actually cut the sushi rolls instead of us doing it by hand. Getting labels on a spool, on a label printer, a thermal label printer instead of, you know, I used to get 5 labels to the A4 sheet.
Oh, yeah.
And if I cut them with the Stanley knife, I got clean finish, Gary. So 5 to the page. And as long as it wasn't raining, if you went really quickly into the store, the ink wouldn't run. So from small beginnings.
That's cool. That's real, though. That's the stuff that I love hearing, because people sometimes, like, they'll skip forward really quickly. I'm like, whoa. Bring it back to like the first 6, 12, 18, 24 months, because that's the bit that when you're listening to, you kind of go, oh, that's cool.
That's the bit that fires you up. That's fires the bit you up, that makes the story around the dinner table.
Because people can't really kind of go, they see the finished product, see this beautiful product now, and they have, and they're like, oh, it's amazing. That's so cool. And you think it's a massive, big, like, food company, which it is now. They often can't see how to get from there to there. They can't see, how do I start on myself? Like, whereas, and you're like, it's quite logical, right? You test it in a market, you get one person, then 2. But like, they're the real things. Like, you don't know what you don't know, right?
You don't know until you do.
You'd never run a big factory. You'd never run a big production facility. Like, how are you going to know? So how did you increase the trays? Like, all those little micro improvements, how long to get up to the tray per hour you needed?
Oh, it took years. You know,
really?
It did take years. Yeah. But I mean, I reached the break-even point. Because obviously I managed to keep going, and I was, you know, I with the support of the local enterprise board. And then when we moved from Bray into Smithfield, we were in Smithfield for maybe 12 years. And again, I was getting a bit more savvy, trying to tap into the supports. And the Dublin local enterprise board were brilliant. I had an available unit in the Spade Enterprise Centre, and I got support from the Dublin local office for a capital grant. I got some financial mentoring, and we fitted it out, and I bought my first rice washer. So again, another key piece of machinery in the sushi business is every batch of rice every 3 kilos of rice has to be washed, you know, until the water runs clear.
Oh my God.
And then it needs to rest. Then it needs to be steamed and cook.
That wrecks my head when I do with a little pot of basmati at home. It takes me about 5 goals and I still end up spilling half it into the frame of the sink.
I know, I had timers everywhere. I was like, okay, wash. Oops, sorry,
I'm 5 minutes. I'm whizzing it around. I've got the hot water tap and I'm whizzing it around. And I'm like, oh, great, close enough.
Yeah, so we got a rice washer machine. And again, it just took that little bit of labor out. You know, it was just a step in the right direction for becoming a bigger business. But how did you keep going? How did I keep going? Mm. I don't know. I've obviously got a resilience or a greater determination. And I want to make myself proud, my family proud. I wanted to pay them back as well, clear the credit card debt, which I've done. So, yeah. I don't know. I just kept getting up every morning and going at every day and inching forward. Positive feedback from consumers, positive input from family, friends. I don't know what to say. I just felt like it was the way forward for me, but it certainly wasn't a tough road. Mm. It certainly wasn't an easy road.
Mm. I'm always fascinated by that. It's like what motivates people? What motivates people day in, day out? Because it's working for yourself is a tough road and it'll ebb and flow a lot.
It did reach a point. I remember being in Sicily, myself and Tommy, my husband. We were on holidays in Sicily and I was pregnant with my first child. So it was around 2010. And I was expecting to get paid. So we went to the ATM in Trapani and there was no money in the account. And I rang back to my accounts lady who was looking after things in my absence. And I said, what's going on? There's no money coming out of the ATM. And she said, oh, I'm very sorry, Kira. We were a bit short on the bank account, so I left you off. So I am dying of morning sickness, 34 degree heat in Sicily. They didn't serve food at 6 o'clock and I just couldn't hang on till 8 o'clock. I was absolutely beside myself.
Getting hangry.
I was so hangry. And I just said, this isn't on. I cannot be the one that's going to give. And if I can't make this business working for me, you know, and for my future family, you know, because really I was working for it at that time.
How long were you in at that stage?
So 2006 I began, that was 2010. Okay. So really when I moved into the new setup in Smithfield, you know, with the CapEx and I had fished it out and I had my new rice washer, and I had my first child. I'd say that was serious motivation. You know, it wasn't just me anymore. You know, I was a mum now, a young mum. And if I was going to spend my time on something, an enterprise, it had better be worth it. I was going to make sure it was worth it.
Did that flip your mindset then about how you approach the business?
Absolutely. I think I was okay to kind of take less pay or, you know, manage on a very, very tight budget. And I just thought, I needed to get working for me now. I need to be able to take home a wage. I need to be able to spend time with my baby, toddler, preschooler through all the stages.
Mm. So what changed?
I introduced Mummy Mondays for myself. Because when you work for yourself, you are in control of your schedule. So if I was working 60, 70 hours a day, and also my childminder started calling the baby as he began to talk, started calling her. I came home and he had said, Mommy Kiza. And I realized
that
she was working 40, 50 hours a week because I wasn't there. And that something really had to change. So, you know, it wasn't overnight and it was swings and roundabouts. You know, I was still putting my all into it. You know, I work hard. I worked hard. But I wanted to be the mummy.
What are Mummy Mondays? Talk to me about
that. So Mummy Mondays was me spending the day with Luke, whether it was dropping him to creche for, say, a half day, picking him up, bringing him to the park. But it was about Mummy Mondays. So my priority on that Monday was being there for Luke, then Luke and Genevieve, then Luke, Genevieve and Elizabeth. So I think it was given equal importance to that Oishi was maybe my first baby, who wasn't my only baby. I have three babies, actual babies, four babies if you include Oishi. You know, and they're all so, so important to me, but equal importance.
I love that. I really love that. I do ditch days with Willow.
Ditch days.
Ditch days.
Love it. So is it wellies?
Like, I'm not going to school. I'm not going work. You're not going crash. Ah. What do you want to do? And it's really like we went to Emerald Park, brilliant, aka Potato Park. You know, the zoo, like simple things like going on the train, like just days where it's just me and her. Yeah. I love it to be like a Friday or something. Like, right, let's just not go.
Yeah, it's like nearly going on the hop, going, do you know what? Yeah, let's go to the beach.
It's the best. It's the honestly the best. I was literally mapping it out this morning. I was like, right, when's my next ditch day? Okay, 2 weeks' time. I just love it.
Your own boss.
100%. And I wouldn't give that up for any money, to be honest, because like you do go under pressure. Like there's a lot of stuff comes at you and you're like, this is tough. Mm. And there's days where you're like, yeah, I wouldn't give that up for anything, though. Mm. It's often things like that. Like, they're small things, but big things. And you have to carve. You have to be really ruthless. Because I love your message there of, like, you can't be the last person. Like, a lot of entrepreneurs have a martyr complex of, like, oh, no, you know, it's a struggle and it's this and it's that. And
I'll go down with the ship.
I was like, yeah, but does it have to be? It is bloody hard, you right? There's no two ways about it. Yeah. But if you always have that mindset of like, oh, it's a struggle and it's hard, it'll always be hard and a struggle. Mm. But it's how do you reframe that? Like, I love the way...
It's the reframe.
Yeah, everything's a reframing. Like, it has to be. I love the way that, like, at a time that you're under massive pressure, that instead of just kind of going, oh, this just isn't working, you were like, right, how can this work? Like, how can I be an incredible mom and how can I build an incredible business? Like, it's... I love that.
Well, I didn't want anything to give, so I didn't want to give up on Oishi. But you have to leave energy in the tank, you know, to be there when you get home, you know, whether it's for dinner or for games after dinner or bedtime, you know, you want to be there, not just in person, but in mind and spirit.
It's funny, because like, I've had a lot of conversations on this podcast with people who've been very, very successful on paper, and then they talk about their personal life and stuff, and it does make you kind of wonder what it's all about for some people, because they just never get their head up to look and see, what do I actually want? You know, they're kind of like, oh, you know, the kids are grown now and we get on. I'm like, that's the saddest statement in the world. We get on. I get on with my neighbors, like they're not my kids. Like, yeah, it's wild. So I love that. And thanks for sharing that. That's really a lovely story.
I think it's a thread as well that I've continued on with the staff within the business. You know, if there's a sports day, if there was a recital, if somebody has somebody home at home sick, that's your priority. Mm. Call me later. Go in late. I'll call you tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So we would often do that. Go say, oh, yeah, are you free for a Zoom meeting at 1 o'clock? No, Genevieve's got a GAA match. I have to be down at the pitch. Grant, we'll reschedule for 3 o'clock. So I think it's that flexibility. We've carried that right through. And everyone who works in Oishi knows that that's how I feel.
Mm. That's incredible leadership, though, because I think you have to be the one showing that, because it's grand having the HR policy that, oh, yeah, we flexible this and flexible that. And you're like, you no more believe that now. It's just there on the wall just because you feel like you have to. But it's when the leader actually does the action. I think that's the biggest statement any company can have, is that you live by the values of it.
Yeah.
So bring me back to Italy. Was Cipriani, you said?
Pardon?
Where you say you was in Italy?
Oh, I was in Sicily.
Sicily. When you came back, what did you do? How did you start to make that change?
I think it was about using my time more wisely and knowing that I couldn't continue doing everything, that my energy was limited, my time was limited. What was I best at? And who could I hire to do the bits that I wasn't best at? You know, so I think hiring those that are better at what they do than you are, that allows you, frees you up to continue. So I am a good advocate for the business. I believe in the business. I'm very passionate about food, about sushi, about Oishi. So as long as I don't have to worry about, say, the accounts element or deliveries, logistics, I can continue to build the business and build the well-rounded team because I've got the support around me.
So did you kind of like look, map it all out and kind of go, right, I'm probably not best using my time here, here and here, and then start to distribute that out? Or what way did you do it? Because obviously you said you've only so much time and energy. Like, how did you allocate that time?
I really did. I mean, I'm a list maker. So I would start most days, even still now, with a list of what am I going to prioritize? You know, there's 24 hours in the day for everybody. How are we going to maximize my time at work today so that I can go home and switch off or move on, do something else? So I think time management is hugely important. And I think also knowing your limits. We all have a threshold, whether it's for stress, pressure, and knowing when to just pause, step back, and think, I'm getting caught up in this. I'm losing sight. I'm losing clarity. That's really, really important too.
Do you think some founders get addicted to the madness?
You can probably feed off the madness, all right. I love a bit of madness. But there is a threshold, you know, where it just becomes madness goes into this is too much.
Yeah. So what were the kind of key moves you made then? Did you hire new people to join you?
Hiring. Yeah. I think one of my best investments is in the team that I've built around me. Now, the team has grown and contracted and grown again over the years between all of the ups and downs and challenges between Brexit, COVID and different things. I would say there was a turning point 2 years ago when we moved into our now unit in Dublin 12. And at that time, we were 25 strong team in Oishi. And when I see how we've grown rapidly in the last 2 years to a team of 70, 75 plus.
That's a big
which
jump.
Which is phenomenal.
That's huge.
Huge. And I suppose managing that growth and trying to retain the culture of whether it's the values around flexible working, you know, family, work, life, intermingling, being equally important. Yeah, so I suppose there's always growth challenges.
Love how you just threw that in. 25 to 78. 2 years. Talk to me like about that. So bring me back 2 years ago, just before the move, you were in Smithfield. What sparked then the move? And then like what propelled this growth? Because that's phenomenal growth.
Wow. Okay. So there's a few questions there. So when we were in Smithfield, we had been there coming on 11, 12 years. We were at breaking point in terms of capacity. We had serious capacity constraints. We could not produce anymore. Made some very, very good hires that joined the team that had international experience and were really wingmen and are still to this day. And also around that time, I suppose I'm going back probably to 2019, 2020, I had just had my third child. I know I'm mentioning children quite a bit, but work life and home life, they're not separate for me. Like literally, if you follow the trajectory of the business, you can pretty much map out the trajectory of my life. So Elizabeth was born, third child in November 2019. I was obviously emailing, you know, zooming away from Hollow Street. COVID then, utter lockdown come the March. Working from home. The team was curtailed. We had to make the vans redundant. The vans were taken off the road because all of the deliveries to stores stopped.
Okay. So you had been on, you had vans on the road doing all your deliveries.
Absolutely.
Yourself.
Yeah. We were supplying probably 70 or 80 stores around the Dublin and Greater Dublin area.
Wow.
We actually had three vans at one stage. So we used to cover Dublin South, Dublin North, and Dublin West, say down as far as Junction 14. So the vans were made redundant. The team was curtailed and we had to stagger staff throughout the night to, you know, meet the COVID restrictions.
Did consumption of sushi drop then as well? Like, because I know there was a weird time there where, you know, you couldn't go out and you obviously couldn't go to the convenience stores where I think a lot of your stuff was sold. So what happened in that time?
Everything changed in that time. So I'm stuck at home, three kids, working remotely. The team are not really sure what the next move what the next moves were. We actually did Just Eat for a while. We started doing a takeout from the premises in Smithfield, which actually went really well, but it's not where we were headed.
Yeah.
And we just had a really hard look at the business. We did a strategic marketing review supported by Enterprise Ireland, and through Zoom sessions, really intense Zoom sessions, the conclusion was that we were going to transition the business to a sale-only model. We needed to move away from the van sales, which was redundant anyway because
of COVID.
What's
a sale-only model?
So a sale-only model, what that meant to us was a move away from door-to-door deliveries. So myself or David or whoever the sales rep was going into store, stocking the shelves, merchandising the shelves, taking away any returns and doing this little and often, to what we call a sale-only model, which was a central distribution base. So going in bulk, in volume, pallet-based business through warehouses, knowing exactly what the customer, for example, Lidl, Tesco, Aldi, so retail customer wants in terms of a consolidated order, and allowing us to do our job, which was make fresh to order and do what we do best.
Okay.
And really during that strategic marketing review, we broke down the key elements of the product. So we make sushi, but what is sushi? You know, it's vinegared rice. It's rice that's paired with a roasted seaweed, nori, different fillings, tuna, smoked salmon, chicken katsu. But the nuts and bolts of it were that we know rice, we know fish, we know vegetables. We want to be fresh, convenient, easy to eat. We care about nutrition and health. And we were becoming known in this space. So it was taking Oishi Sushi and gaining reach through a distribution method that we couldn't achieve on our own. So really, this transition was a pivotal point in the business.
It makes so much sense.
So when you say, how did we keep going through COVID? We kept going through a cycle of production over a 24-hour period, 7 days a week.
So your factory was going 24 hours a day?
It was, with me managing it remotely and relying on communicating through WhatsApp, phone, Zoom, trying to support staff remotely. It was the most bizarre time. But our business with Lidl, if I can mention them, kept us going, particularly through COVID, because we had already established a trade relationship through their depots. So we continued supply through their depots because there wasn't too much personal interaction.
Okay. This was the new model you were going towards.
This was the new model.
Had you been doing much of that before or just a wee bit?
No, we were very much reliant on the van sales model.
God, sounds like hard work.
It was hard work. It really was. And it was a bit of a beast control. It was very unpredictable. The patterns around sale or return, managing stock. It took away actually from what we are good at. Like our capabilities lie in creating fresh, healthy food to eat on the go. Inspired by Japan, you know, loving Asian flavors and putting these different combinations of, as I said, rice, fish, vegetable together in a way that various consumers would want to eat. And what COVID also did was people couldn't go out. They couldn't go to restaurants. We were bored. I mean, I couldn't eat another ham sandwich. Then I moved on to falafel wraps, you know, and you'd really look forward to what was I going to have for lunch or dinner. It was the main topic of conversation, I think, in every household. So we brought a bit of interest to the meal occasion, you know, a bit of joy to the table in an otherwise very depressing time for us all.
I think that's a very powerful lesson. What you've just shared there is like, know your superpower and do more of it. I think we've a tendency to get caught into doing everything. You try to be everything, you try to be a distributor, try to be a marketer, you try to be a producer, you try to be everything to all people at all times. I think that's a really powerful exercise. I think a lot of people could do right now and kind of benefit their business from it. Like what are you the best in the world at?
And you know, Gary, it was the first time from when I began, so 2006, and now we're talking about what, 2020? It was the first time that I had stopped, the business had stopped. COVID stopped us in our tracks. And when the stores started opening up again and we started getting phone calls, you know, when are the vans back on the road? I thought, I can't go back to that. I have stopped. I have thought And I've reached a clarity that the way forward here is greater reach, made fresh to order. We know exactly what the customer wants. We're going to make it. We're going to send it out in bulk and we're going to get paid for it. This is the way I want to go.
Love it.
And today we have excellent representation all across the island of Ireland. We supply the top five. We have a great working relationship with Lidl, Aldi, Tesco, Dunnes, Super Value, Apple Green. And would you believe we've just launched nationwide with BWG, who are the head group for Spar, Eurospar, Mace, Landis, Gala. So this is really a big move because we had great representation in Spar, Eurospar stores prior to COVID. We then went from, say, 30% with that retail group to virtually nothing to now we're supplying them nationwide. Now we're only at the very, very start of the journey, but it's an exciting one.
That's class. You literally will be everywhere.
I hope so. I suppose ultimately our goal would be to be a household name in terms of, you know, a healthy lunch or dinner or light meal alternative. You know, swap out your sandwich, swap out your wrap, sushi. It's so versatile. We've got a huge, you know, uptake from those who are interested in health, nutrition, you know, sport, working out. And it's not because we're putting anything into the products. It's the actual nature of the products. The nutritionals come from the ingredients that we use, the fish content. Some of our sushi trays contain up to 18 grams of protein. Not because of anything added to it, just by the ingredients. We do as little as we can to the ingredients, let them speak for themselves.
That's the key thing. I said this to you across the road, like when I'm on the road, which I'm on the road a lot, it's my go-to. Like I'll go in anywhere and I'm like, I'll grab a tray of sushi, I'll get a protein milk and a banana. Every time. Because when you look, when you go into like, you know, Circle K or a Spar or Super Value, whatever, it can often be quite hard to find a good healthy snack, especially in the smaller shops. In the bigger shops, Super Value is great, but like in the smaller shops, won't be a lot of healthy options.
Yeah.
Everything will be packaged and everything will be full of sugar and it will have a lot of additives. Whereas when you're looking around, you're looking in the, especially in the fridge section, if it isn't a sandwich, what are you getting? Like, you know, honest to God, me and Ben were on the road last week, actually, we're heading to Cork. I went into somewhere and I was just like looking at it going, there ain't nothing here. It was either a sandwich, a wrap, or nothing.
Mm.
I'm like, it's 2025. Like, people are smarter and they're healthier. Like, I'll always try and make the healthy choice and be very conscious of what I put in my body. And that's always the choice I'll make because it just is. It's whole foods. You know, you go back to like the basics, just whole foods.
Mm.
Like, I think you're riding kind of a, I know it's been a long journey, but you're riding the crest of a wave as well in terms of health and wellness and awareness.
Definitely.
I think over COVID, like a lot of things happened over COVID. People did become more aware of what they're eating.
Oh, definitely.
Did a little bit more time. You said it there. It's the first time in a long time people stopped. I was even having this chat with somebody this morning and they were like, I'm stuck in traffic here for the last hour and a half. They were like, how did we do this before COVID? They were from home a lot.
How do we do it and do we really have to do it?
Bingo. Because like I've worked for myself nearly all my life. So I'd always be doing irregular hours and be doing irregular things. And like Michelle would look at me and go, it's like on Monday at 10 o'clock. What are you doing? I'm like, oh, I'm just heading to the gym. She'd just be like shaking her head. Like it was so alien to her. Whereas now, you know, she's worked from home a lot. And, you know, the standard of life people have is so much better. I know people complain about it a lot. Like a lot of companies like, oh, everyone back to the office and blah, blah, blah. There is a blend. There's definitely a blend that can be done. There's definitely a healthier blend. I love the fact that like, because you've been disproved a lot of the myths that people are starting to propagate now of like, oh, you can't run a business from home. You can't do this. Whereas you run quite a labor intensive business, but you're still approaching it from the new model of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
New distribution methods, new ways of working. You know, you're able to look at different things. I think coming out of COVID, I think a lot of companies really did struggle to understand that new world. I think a lot of people are still struggling to understand the new world.
Mm-hmm.
So you've really established a position of strength now. What's the next move for you?
We definitely have a clear vision of how we want to grow over the next 3 to 5 years. And I think that journey began in a big way with the move to Dublin 12 and the new facility and releasing our production capacity constraints that we had in the previous site. And I think how the team has evolved, how the company as an organisation has evolved and splintered out across three shifts, 7 days a week, and how we keep that team culture and, you know, oishy way of doing things going. So much more emphasis on team and finding efficiencies, being innovative in how we're working, and just, I don't know where I'm going with this, to be quite honest.
But you've evolved a lot. Like your new facility, like when you go back, you say 2 years ago, 25 to 78, like that's a huge transition to go from a small-ish unit in Smithfield to this massive purpose-built facility in Dublin 12. Like it's huge.
It is. And I think it shows that although we've come such a long way, the more sushi we make, the more hands we need to make it. It is still unbelievably labour intensive. I don't know if I can quite call ourselves artisan anymore. We're probably a bit too large in terms of staff numbers, but in many ways we haven't strayed far from the artisanal roots. It is so handmade.
But it looks
filled.
Like when
so
I pick it up here, like
you have to come out, actually.
I always think I'd love to see it. I love seeing behind the doors. But when you look at it, like it is intricate. Like it's not like you're pouring, no offense to anyone that makes drinks, but you're not pouring drink in a bottle. You're not making like 10,000 litres and just pumping it into a bottle. Like you're making this, all these.
Absolutely. We like have a whole shift to prep it.
Yeah.
We have a whole shift to form the sushi pieces, make the maki, make the nigiri, which are the hand-molded balls of sushi rice. And we have a whole other team that are putting the toppings on. Each of those toppings has to be carved by hand. So every little topping that you see on a nigiri of smoked salmon or fresh salmon that we produce is hand produced. So it takes skill, it takes time, it's laborious, it's repetitive. And you asked me earlier, how did I get people to come in and work at 3 a.m? And my hat off to my staff. I have such respect. It is such hard work. And I really respect them all for just bringing their all every day, day in, day out. Because our motto is every tray, every day. We're only as good as our last batch. You know, it's consistency.
I know, yeah.
We have to keep delivering. If you buy our sushi every week, you are going to notice in an instant if something's not right. So consistency, to become a trusted household brand, you know, we cannot lose that trust. We are only as good as our last production.
How do you keep that focus throughout the team? Because obviously 25 to 78, that's a huge leap. That's a lot of new blood, a lot of new ideas. How do you keep that focus? So how do you keep that messaging? Because a lot of people, when they come on the pod, they're like, oh, you know what? A really good guy explained to me like the two-room problem.
The two-room problem?
Yeah, it's the best way someone explained it to me. He's like, oh, you know what? We're all in one room. It was kind of grand. I think he said there was like 13, 14 of them. They're all in one room. They're all working away. Sales guys were there, the marketing people were here, the finance people were there, everyone was, you know, working away. And he's like, we got a new office and it was literally down the corridor. So they were in the same building, same floor, everything, but the communication dropped. He's like, we lost so much and we had to rebuild this whole thing of thinking how we communicate as a team. So how do you communicate that every tray, every day message to like such a vast number of people working at different times of the day?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head there, Gary, because communication is key, you know, and also sending the messages that resonate with the team from the top down, from the bottom up. So, you know, we do not take a hierarchical approach. We're down on the floor, we're engaging with staff, you know, and we have a good structure of communication. So meetings, handovers. So there's communication between every shift, what went well, what didn't go well, areas to follow up on. But it's not easy. It's, you know, it's day in, day out.
There's quite literally a lot of moving parts.
There are so many moving parts.
When I think about it.
I would be dizzy if I think about them all in one go.
So is that like a standing up thing? As in like, I'm on the shift now and I'm going to hand over to you. Is that like a standing up thing going, okay, here's what's happened in the last 8 hours?
It's everything. It's on the speaker in the car on the way into the office. It's, you know, WhatsApp groups. It's, I need this now. Who can help?
Okay.
So it's really, really a team mentality. And I think that we do have a flexibility within the business. As I said, if somebody needs to go, needs time off, we'll do everything we can to facilitate that. Because what goes around comes around. In turn, we're after getting a huge order in tonight. We're not going to do it with the current numbers. Who can we pull in? Having strong relationships up and down the supply chain. You know, we have long-standing relationships with our fish suppliers, our packaging suppliers. If you get a large order, we might need 4 more fillets of salmon. You know, we need to be able to ring up and say, we don't have enough fish.
Yeah.
You know, can you deliver?
It was only when you explained it to me over coffee, like how frequently the orders come in. It makes total sense now because I'm like, you know, sushi has to be fresh and has to be quick and has to be fast. I never realized it was such a, like a relentless process of like, you know, day after day, new orders coming in. Like, you know, you're not making 10,000 widgets every day. You're making all different types all the time. Yeah. Like that's a massive undertaking.
Yeah.
What are the key advice you'd give to like, because a lot of people want to start food businesses. Ireland is incredible for food. Like, what advice would you give them? Because it does seem to be a tougher than normal choice. So if you were, with all the wisdom over the last 19 years, what, if you were starting again fresh, 2025, new idea, but with your knowledge, what are the key mistakes and things you definitely do and things you definitely wouldn't do?
I think if I was starting from zero in 2025, I would still start a food business, even though it is so difficult. But if I've learned anything over the years, it probably would be to plan better from the outset. You know, there's no shortage of ideas and things that can be done, but not everything is possible. And you have to be prepared to put the work in. If you're looking for something that's going to give you a return in 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, it's just unlikely to happen. So you have to think long term.
So when you said plan better, what would you do?
Well, I mean, a business plan would be a start. You know, that would have been a good idea.
But would you have started if you realized how hard it was? That's what a lot of people say to me. They're like, I was so naive. I knew what I knew now. I just wouldn't start.
No, you know, but I was just so green, you know.
Because there is an issue in that people can tend to overplan and overthink. Because if you thought about it logically, there's usually 100 reasons not to do something and 10 reasons to do something. So we'd have no entrepreneurs if we all like sat around and planned it. But what we need is more curious who just do an experiment and go, I'm going to do a market this weekend. So how do we bridge that gap?
Well, what's the worst thing that can happen?
There we go. Yeah.
You know. So I suppose every day, like stuff goes wrong all of the time. Every other week, you know, there's a calamity of sorts, staff, equipment, you know, you couldn't ride it. You just have to be prepared to persevere and learn how to take it in your stride, not take it personally as well. I mean, I'm not a particularly thick-skinned person, but somehow I managed to let a certain level of the chaos just wash over me.
Mm.
I'm working on my deadpan face.
How you talked about it there, not take it personally. I think that's quite a big insight because it is personal, right? It's your business. You said, you know, it's your baby. A lot of this business is your baby, but there does become a point where that can become a hindrance that can hold you back. So how did you learn to still keep that love and that passion, but not let it like anchor you down?
Well, I definitely think you need to have the right supports around you, because if you're left to your own devices, you can become a bit riddled with self-doubt, imposter syndrome. And negative self-talk is very detrimental. You need to be kind to yourself, speak kindly to yourself. So that inner voice, you know, we can do whatever we set our minds to. But in addition to that, I think surrounding yourself with people who are going to help you swim in the right direction, you know, upstream. I'm thinking of the salmon upstream.
Great,
it's so much
great
easier.
Fish pun. Yeah. Appreciate it and note it.
But I'm telling you, I can pinpoint times where the tide was against me, you know, and it was such hard work. It was exhausting. Your muscles are aching. And you're thinking, why am I treading water? I'm swimming forward and I'm not getting anywhere. But if you've got the right people around you, supporting you, giving you insights.
Do you mean mentors or what do you mean?
I think it's a combination of mentors. So if you are struggling in an area, you know, finance, HR, whatever the area is, by saying, that's not my area. I need to go to the best person that I know about this and for them to give me a steer. Do that. Not being afraid to ask for help, you know. No man is an island and all that.
Yeah, I was listening to a great YouTube video this morning, a guy in the US called Dan Martell, and he talks about buying back your time. I really like that concept. But his he said this morning, his video was, I like just to buy the blueprint. He's like, I don't keep creating this every time. He's like, I find the best person. Yeah. I just buy their blueprint, whatever that is, whatever. I just need, if I like exactly what you said there, I just find the best person, go, here's €1,000, teach me everything.
And don't micromanage them, you know. They're best at what they do. Let them do it.
What do people spend too much time at in the early stages of business that is a giant waste of time?
Worrying, probably. You need to just get stuff done. You just need to make it happen. Get out of your head. Get on the road. Get in the van.
The cure for anxiety is action, right?
Action. Action. I'm a doer. I'm a list maker. I'm a doer. I get a great sense of satisfaction by giving that tick.
Every day.
Every day.
Look back here. I have my...
Every tray. Every
I have
day.
My ticks. Look. Every day.
A man that after
is,
my own
that
heart.
That is how I keep it. My brain. Because someone messaged me the other day. I was getting like a longevity test done. They're like, I love how structured you are with your work and your business and your life. And I'm like, do you know why that is? Because I am the most unstructured person in the world. My brain is going in 1,000 different directions. And if I don't have that structure...
Write it down.
Chaos.
Yeah.
Chaos ensues because I spend mental energy trying to remember.
Oh, yeah. And it's exhausting and you can't.
I have a very distracted brain. If I don't write it down.
But I don't think you're alone in that. I mean, I think there are so many distractions now. Life is a bombardment of WhatsApp, social media. The phone is ringing. The emails are coming in. You're getting a holler from the other room. How are you supposed to find order in all of that?
How do you find order? Because you've clearly got a very clear vision. You've got a clear roadmap. You've made a big move in the last 2 years. So how do you set that vision and action it?
Well, sometimes there are times that I just need to go and work on my own. From my kitchen, from a hotel, from wherever I might find a bit of peace. Down the pier, you know. Sometimes you actually need to step away from everybody. Because often I find, you know, other people's agenda can run you. So you have your agenda of what you want to get done in a day. They have their agenda of what they want you to get done in a day. You know, so I suppose maybe a little bit of pushback as well. So top priorities, what am I going to do no matter what comes at me today? Getting that done, staying on course, note-taking. Not easy. Doesn't always happen.
Hotel lobbies are a great one. That's my little secret. When I want to get some work done, I'll go find a cool hotel lobby and just sit there. I just find it quite stimulating. Yeah. Like the environment matters.
Yeah.
The environment, I'm a big believer in that as well, is that like where you work matters and what you're working on requires a different type of environment.
You're right. It depends on what you need to get done. Mm. So if, say, we've discovered a blocker on the production floor, you know, where there's a productivity... How do I say that? So if we're trying to make improvements on the production floor to free up capacity, get a quicker run through, you need to be on the production floor. You need to be in it, seeing what's happening, looking at the moving parts, what needs to change here. And that way you find your new way of working. Whereas if actually you need to just think strategically and be left alone, then you need to find clarity and step away and just...
So 78 people now. You're going to be everywhere in Ireland in the next couple of months. You nearly already are. What's left for you?
What's left? I feel like we're only getting going, Gary. We're on the runway. We're about to take off. I just feel like I've just got like a renewed excitement.
That's cool.
About the business. My baby's grown up. I'm going to be 20 next year. It's just such
that
a big
deal. That is wild.
Like, I have to celebrate
huge.
It.
That is absolutely massive. Like, you know, certain these milestones have to be celebrated.
Have to be celebrated. So we're getting better at celebrating.
What's going to be the 20th celebration? Do we know? And are we coming?
There's going to be cake.
Surely sushi cake.
There's going to be sushi, yeah. Maybe a sushi cake.
Because now we know it's actually rice. It's not raw fish.
That's it. Yeah, I quite like the idea of a sushi cake.
20, that's big though. You'll have to do something huge for that. You'll have to do something big, something fun.
I need to start planning that.
You do.
I don't
I
know what we're going to do.
Yeah, to the left.
I don't know what we're going to do.
Make a list. Make a list today. Wild
we're
ideas.
We're very busy, and often you can be busy being busy.
Mm.
And other yearly anniversaries have come and gone. Mm. You know, and I've barely had a cup of tea and a Kit Kat. You said, oh, lads, today, you know, we turned 18, we turned 19. We really have to celebrate this. But next year we will, without a doubt.
Especially a food business, because, you know, cycles happen so quickly now. Mm. It feels like things have sped up so quickly. Like with social media, like we were laughing earlier about Dubai chocolate. Like this stuff just blows up out of nowhere. Acai bowls, you know, matcha lattes. Like there's just these trends that just blow up all of a sudden. You're like, wow, where did that? We were actually in Dubai in February. And I always ask people when I go somewhere, I was like, what's the one thing I should do here? Not like the 10 things. So I was like, because I was there for work, I was doing podcasts, and I was like, didn't have a lot of free time. What's the one thing? And they're like, oh, you have to try to buy chocolate. I was like, okay, what's the other one thing? Because that sounds lame, right? And like, we came home, and about 3 weeks later, the whole craze started.
Just took off, and went viral. Like,
but not if you'd said, Gary, I'll give you €1 million if you can predict a trend. Not in 1,000 years would I have said, this Dubai chocolate thing is going to become a trend. But almost like a fad, because now it almost seems to have blown off.
Mm.
So how have you stayed relevant over 20 years? Because you've rode the course. Like a lot of food companies get really, really popular for a little bit. Mm. I'm at this gig now 6 years, nearly 7 years. I've seen a lot of companies come and go in that time.
Mm.
So it's exceptionally difficult. So how have you rode the wave?
As I said, I think it's evolving the team, but also evolving the product range. So we would have went from 8 or 9 SKUs, product types, to now we have 18 product types. So I think an evolution within the range. Mm. You know, Oishi Sushi is the most well-known brand. We've also launched our Poke Bowls.
They're class.
Yeah. So it's going back to the building blocks of, you know, what is a Poke Bowl? It's on the bed of sushi rice, the vinegared rice, with toppings of fish. So we have a tropical prawn, and then you have your other side ingredients like juicy mango pieces, some pickled carrot, cucumber slices. So it's really rice, fish, vegetables in a different format. It reminds me of, there's a sushi type called chirashi sushi, which just means scattered sushi. I mean, it's effectively a poke bowl, but poke became popular in Hawaii and the States. I mean, it's just a healthy bowl, very convenient, great nutritionals. And that's what we're all about.
How do you still find balance? Because obviously you're running a big business now. And you talked about like Mummy Mondays, and you talked about the priority being your three children. So how do you still find balance as the company has grown?
I just prioritize my time, and I build on the relationships around me. What can I say? I can't do it all myself. So I'm utterly reliant on that team, and we need each other, and they're doing a great job. As I said, it's a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week operation. So Oishi isn't me anymore.
What? As you kind of, we talked about fads there, but what else do you think is coming down the tracks for people that are kind of like, I want to kind of give, like, as we come to a close, I want to kind of give some kind of insights to like aspiring founders and people who really want to be in the food space. What other areas interest you right now? What are you kind of seeing? Because obviously you've got incredible, I think founders who've been at this game a while just develop incredible pattern recognition. You can look at a product and go, yep, no, yep, no. What areas are emerging do you think there is opportunity to either launch business or grow a business in?
Well, there have definitely been a lot of emerging trends in the area of food or drinks with benefits, whether it's the likes of VitHit, that's hugely popular.
Love Gary. Again, grafting for a very long time. A very, very long time.
So food and drinks with benefits, kefir, huge, turmeric, the medicinal properties of turmeric.
I have a turmeric shot most days, to be
fair. Do you? Yeah. Very good. In India, apparently, they have the lowest levels of esophageal cancer due to the turmeric in their diet.
Interesting.
But, you know, it's just the health and nutritional benefits of food. So, you know, to live well, eat well, be well. And how can we do that? I know that protein is such a big thing at the moment. I think it probably is around to stay. But I do think it's all about balance. I think it's about a well-rounded approach to diet. I'm not into fad diets myself or trends. So I think it's just about a holistic approach to what you consume, be it food, drink, social media.
Definitely everything in moderation. What's your go-to meal that isn't sushi? What's your apps? Obviously, your favorite food is sushi.
We eat sushi everywhere, all the time.
You're like your go-to. If you're like having a treat on a Friday or Saturday, what's your like, oh, that is my meal?
It depends where I am, what state I'm in.
Nuanced answer. Go on, give me a few then.
Ramen. I absolutely adore ramen. And actually, there's an amazing ramen place not far from here. Nomu Ramen. It's only around the corner near the Odeon.
I have this weird thing. I don't like food that's hard to eat. That's my little weird pet peeve thing. I'm like,
they actually do ramen without the broth.
Now
check
we're talking.
It out.
Now we're talking. Okay, I'll give it a go.
It's maybe not first date material, but definitely.
Don't order spaghetti bolognese or ramen.
Bag ball. It's a no. Love a spag ball. Love ramen. Gosh, there's so many. It really depends. As I said, I have a food type for nearly every occasion.
Okay. Is there any cool products you're keeping an eye on right now? Anything you're like, oh, that's a really cool product. I enjoy that. Or I kind of see like an emerging product.
Yeah, I mean, I'm very impressed recently with a company called BSL.
BSL, that rings
have you heard of them?
Bell. I've heard of them, but I don't know much about
them. I've never met them personally, but I have followed their story. So founded by brother and sister, Niamh and Rory Dooley, as far as I know. But it was this concept of sustainable health. You know, taking what was otherwise a byproduct, so the spent grains from breweries, and turning it into a nutritious product.
Oh, BSL. Yeah, their name rings a bell.
So BSL, so they're high fiber, highly nutritious bars. They have a range of products. I don't know exactly the products in their range, but it's this concept that they took something, as I said, from the brewing industry, the spent grain, and they utilized that grain to innovate and create a new range of products.
Love it.
It seems so sustainable, so on trend, so healthy. I love it.
Quick fire round time.
Oh God.
Here we go.
No, I'm not ready.
What book has had the most impact on you, or what's your favorite book?
Okay. I'm a big reader, but mainly for pleasure.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't have to be a business book.
Any book you've enjoyed, anything.
The one I would probably
pinpoint. Okay, going back, I don't know when he published it, but in 2010, I did a management development program led by a gentleman called Blaise Brosnan. It was held in the Glenview every Thursday. I still have the notes. It was brilliant. But he wrote a book called, forgotten the name.
It's okay.
No, I haven't forgotten the name. It's basically You're the Limiting Factor, and it's about unlocking your potential and not holding yourself back. But his wisdom, Blaise Brosnan's wisdom, was just so solid, so on the ground advice. And it really, at that time in the business, only 4 years in, you know, still green behind the ears, Blaise was a fantastic business mentor, and he still is.
The right book at the right time.
Right book, yeah, right time.
I was kind of nodding as you said it. I was like, that just sounded like that's what you needed. Yeah.
That's what you need. Now, you know, there are lots of good business books out there, and The 1 Minute Managers and, you know, Blink, and there's lots of business books. But this one, you know, Blaise is an Irish businessman who tells it how it is. Mm. And that really resonated with me.
Yeah, we've over, I think, 300 books on the list now. And people always ping me on Instagram going, what book should I read? I'm like, what problem are you trying to solve? That's always my first thing is like, what are you trying to solve? Or do you just want a good recommendation of a good story? Because they're the two different definitions. I'll read a story at night and I'll read, like, you know, something nonfiction during the day. But, you know, it really depends where you are, because we can both read the same book. But if we're all looking at it through our own bias, right? We're all looking at it through our own lens.
We are.
So it's important, the right book at the right time. What's your superpower?
Well, I was told that my superpower was managing the balance of growing a 75 strong team and a nationwide brand whilst managing a family of three. So I don't know. I didn't think about it at the time, but I suppose that it is. There is a big mental load, and we kind of joke about how do we manage it all? We'd need a separate diary, you know, for play dates, dentist appointments. All of those apps, every school, a different app. It's an absolute minefield. So I don't know. I'll take it. Superpower.
Sounds like a pretty great superpower. You do seem like a pretty chilled character, I have to say.
That's just the deadpan face, Gary. You have no idea the peddling that's going on underneath.
For a person working at your level, you're a pretty chill character. What daily habit is the secret to your success?
Listen, you never know what every day is going to bring for me. It's so basic. I think it's just getting up and tackling every day like a new day and eating regularly. I can't do without food.
Don't get hangry.
Don't get hangry. Don't get irrational. Little and often.
I am so hungry now. It's so funny because, like, I have the sushi sitting here and I can smell the Del Hunt downstairs.
You should tuck in. I won't mind.
I know. It's only a certain type of people want to hear you. So I won't inflict that on people. What entrepreneur do you most admire? What entrepreneur should people be following in 2025?
The first name that always comes to mind is Michael O'Leary. Mm. I'm a big Michael O'Leary fan.
Me too.
He's a best man like myself. So he did a BESS in Trinity College Dublin. And look, he revolutionized the airline industry. He opened up Europe and so many parts of the world to us, you know, at a time where airline travel was so expensive. But I think in a female context, the lady behind Her Sport.
Oh, Niamh Tallon.
Niamh Tallon.
She's great. Yeah, we've had her on the pod. She's brilliant.
Have you? Mm-hmm. Brilliant.
She's brilliant.
I just think she's brilliant. And reading about Niamh's story and how she's shining the spotlight on kind of the inequality in terms of media coverage when it comes to female sport. I think I read that there was 40% participation, but only single digit media coverage on female sport. And she's taking such an active role in bringing about change in that regard. So hats off to Niamh Tallon. I think she's amazing.
Exceptional. Yeah, she's really, really impressive. But also, like, the impact she's trying to have, she's not just building a media business. What I see her doing is all the, like, the awards, but also highlighting the important thing of, like, education, of, like, how many females will stop sport after 12.
I know. It's unreal.
It's astronomical. It's up in the high 80%. So, like, that's even highlighting that, kind of making people more aware, is so important. Like, they do an incredible job.
And how that young girls and teenagers, you know, they need role models to look up to.
Exactly. I think the Irish athletics team, I always kind of reference them recently, like the likes of Sophie Becker and people like that, where you're like, incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible sports people you can point out and go, they're world class.
Yeah.
And they're a world class role model. It's so powerful. You know, I say this almost every episode because I believe it to my core. You have to see it to be it. You can't see these people, especially if you're not from an area that has a lot of this. You need to see it in other places. I think you need to see it around you. You need to see it on the likes of Her Sport and social media to be able to kind of go, okay, that's possible.
Yeah. And she's just shining a spotlight on those fabulous female athletes. Mm. Creating a visibility that will benefit all the way up.
For sure. Definitely. Good shout out. I'm going to give you €1 million. You can invest it in one person or one company. Who is it?
Honestly, pass. I would find that very hard because my tendency is to go, right, no, I'll split it.
Oh, that's the Irish way.
I'm going to give 350, 350, 300.
Wow.
Very hard. I'm all about equity, equitable.
Who would you like to invest in?
In terms of a business, I suppose often I think there are causes that I would like to support and invest in. I'm very taken with the work that Brent Pope is doing. I follow him on LinkedIn with the Elephant in the Room movement. Mm-hmm. I think it's hugely important. So I suppose one of the things I'm most proud about and where Oishi is in terms of a business, that we are now in a position to support certain causes. And the Elephant in the Room movement is huge. I think mental health and our young people, there's a bombardment that's coming at them and they need to be supported. And it's really important to keep talking. So yeah, I suppose there are, what would you call them? Altruistic.
Mm-hmm. You can invest in a social enterprise. Yeah. That's 100%. Yeah. Right. Brent, good news. You're getting $1 million.
Sustainability.
Contact Kira, not me. What do you believe other people would find weird or strongly disagree with you on?
Well, I think in terms of a business insight, I will tell you a little bit of how we prep our veg. So years ago, we used to use a chlorine rinse. This is really, really common in the food industry. And I wasn't a huge fan of applying a chlorine rinse to the cucumbers and carrots, etc. So we did huge testing. We did a lot of testing. And I found that we could achieve the same results using white vinegar. So we rinse our vegetables in vinegar. Now it's a solution, a water to vinegar solution, and we worked on the ratio. But this is perceived as very strange in the food industry. So we've had auditors come through our doors and it is brought up time and again.
Really?
What is your process with the veg? And then I have to kind of reiterate the properties of the vinegar. And
it sounds more natural to me. Like, I'm not a scientist, but it sounds more natural than rinsed in chlorine or rinsed in vinegar. It does sound a lot better.
There's about 1,000 uses for vinegar, vinegar for everything. But we use vinegar now, white vinegar instead of chlorine for washing the veg. So just in terms of, I suppose it's very specific to Oishi. And I suppose I think it highlights that we care about the little things, you know, from even what we're washing our vegetables with, that if we can and we can prove that it's okay to do so, we will find a more natural way of doing it. We will use vinegar instead of chlorine. You know?
The devil's in the detail. If you were to start again in 2025, what would you build?
What would I build if I was starting again? I think I still have a passion for food, so it would definitely be food related. But I'm also much more influenced by sustainability. I don't know, something more sustainable, a sustainable food business, I don't know.
Okay, stick with the food. I like it.
Stick with the food.
Stick to the area of your superpower. What's been your worst investment?
Worst investment, I would have to say, was when I purchased secondhand equipment without doing any due diligence. No warranty, no guarantees, on a bit of faith, absolutely came back to bite me. So I'm a bit of a more savvy purchaser now. But look, you live and learn.
Yeah, buy cheap, buy twice. We've all been there.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. What's been your best investment?
My best investment are the people. The people that have come through the doors of Oishi over the last 19 years, investing in people. I think there's a saying, what if you invest in people and they leave? And what if you don't and they stay?
It's one of my favorite phrases.
Look, you know, let's lift each other up.
Yeah.
Let's bring each other all along.
Yeah, I love it. And then, ironically, they do stay with you.
Yeah.
What's been the best bit of advice you've gotten or given in the last 12 months?
I've been given lots of good advice over the years. In the last 12 months specifically, probably when there were challenging times, and a business advisor that I've known over the years just reminded me that there are times where you just need to keep the boat afloat. You know, every day we push, we push, we push. We're trying to progress and move forward. You know, when things get real, life gets real and life gets hard. Sometimes you just need to steady the ship, keep that boat afloat. And what I mean by that is keep things going the day to day. But it's about prioritizing the top three. If I have only time for the business, because life is taking precedence, what are those top three things that I have to do that nobody else can do? Get them done. Delegate the others or park the others until you're in a position to deal with them.
I think that's phenomenal advice, an incredible way to leave. I think that's an area most founders are probably weakest on. It's the area that needs to be re-emphasized the most. So that's super advice. Where can people learn more about you and the brand?
Well, you can find Oishi Sushi in the food-to-go sections of your nearest retailer, hopefully. Lidl,
everywhere
Aldi,
now.
Dunn, Supervalue, etc. But no, I mean, look, we're on social media. We're on Instagram. I'm not a huge poster. I'm getting better. Instagram, I would say, or LinkedIn, or our website.
Perfect.
But your local store. Or just contact me.
Kira, thank you so much. That was an incredible
chat.
It's been
an absolute pleasure.
Thank you.
To talk to you. Thank you, Gary.